This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
This audio is brought to you by Muslim Central. Please consider donating to help cover our running costs and future projects by visiting www.muslimcentral.com/donate.
Okay, Bismillah. Alhamdulillah, wa salatu wa salam ala Rasulillah. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I hope you can all hear me fine. This is your sister Fatima Barakatullah, and this live session is a live session that actually quite a lot of brothers and sisters asked me to do, and that's because they've been asking me questions about studying an MA, Masters, or an LLM. At SOAS, which is the School of Oriental and African Studies, which is part of the University of London, in Islamic law. And so many brothers and sisters kept asking me questions about it and, you know, comparing it to Islamic studies, for example, whether it's the right thing for them, etc., etc., that I thought it would be really useful to do a video where I answered all those questions in one go. And if you have any questions, please also do post them. Inshallah, I'll introduce you to myself and my own background in terms of Islamic studies and in terms of studying at SOAS. And then hopefully two guests will be joining me this evening. One of them is hopefully Mufti Afnan, Ahmed Afnan from Pakistan, who he was a student at SOAS this year as well. I think Mufti Afnan is here. So inshallah, I'll just bring him in and then we can start discussing the course and just going through some elements of the course, so that if you're somebody who might be considering doing the course, then inshallah, you can make a more informed decision, I guess, right? Assalamu alaikum. Can you hear me?
Yeah, wa alaikum salam, rahmatullah. How are you?
Alhamdulillah, I'm fine. Mufti Afnan, I was just introducing our brothers and sisters to the reason why I was having this session today. And the reason for me is that a lot of brothers and sisters keep asking me about studying Islamic law at SOAS,
yeah.
And especially brothers and sisters who are from an Alimiya background, right? People who've studied, yeah, like classical Islamic studies. Yeah. Sometimes they have a lot of questions like, is it really going to be beneficial for me to study something like this? So what I thought is both of us could, inshallah, introduce people to the course and let them know from, I guess, from our different perspectives, how we found it, what the benefits we found were. So I'm just going to go first, if that's okay. I'm just going to tell everybody that.
Sure.
So I've been doing the course part-time. So you do have the option of doing it over 1 year, 2 years, or 3 years. I've been doing it over 3 years. I took the maximum time so that I could balance it with my family life, I guess, and other projects. And before that, I had studied in Egypt. I've completed my GCSEs and A-levels as usual, studied in Egypt, and then completed an Alimiya degree here in the UK at Ibrahim College, and another Alimiya certification with Sheikh Muhammad Akram Nadwi. And, you know, whenever there were shuyukh coming into town or whenever I could go and visit them, I would go and study with them. So I guess in that sense, I didn't have a official degree from a university, you know, like a traditional degree from a Western university. But alhamdulillah, I applied to SOAS and I got a place in the masters, and that's becoming quite normal nowadays. You know, as long as you have studied at a reputable institution, and it's to degree level. If you're a mature student, I think even if you don't have that background, they will consider you. You know, they will consider you because they understand that, you know, as a mature student, you will have other capabilities and experiences, and they take all of that into account. So I'm going to ask you, Mufti Afnan, like, what was your study background before you came to SOAS, and what mode of study did you decide to do?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. First of all, thank you for taking the initiative and inviting me as well. It's a very good opportunity, not for now, just it's for future students, anyone who asks, anyone who is interested in this course, very good, mashallah. Secondly, my background, I graduated from Alamia in 2005 from Darul Karachi. My studies 7 years were from Jamiat al-Rashid, where I am teaching for the last 14 years. I did my takhassus in Ifta Mufti and then teaching 14 years in different fiqh, usul fiqh, tafsir, hadith, and Islamic finance and then Islamic law. So I did my law degree. I graduated in 2015. And did that was from Karachi. It's a good, credible institution, SM Law College. And then I did the postgraduate law from University of London, distance learning. And that was in human rights law. And then some workshops and courses in Germany and in Geneva International Human Rights Academy, would that help a lot? So what I was doing actually, apart from the traditional classical Islamic law, I was merging it with modern law and specifically human rights law. Well, I was advised to do a Western degree long ago by Dr. Mahmoud Ghazi, a rigorous academic, and he was the dean of Islamic University, Islamabad, back then. He's not with us now. May Allah bless him. So this was the best course which suited me in a reputable Western country. I think this is the only one in UK who's offering Islamic law and Islamic law. Do you know any other institution who's offering this course?
So, so JazakAllah Khairan. So, you know, the Sheikh, you said, who encouraged you to study. Why do you think he encouraged you to do this, you know, to go into like a Western institution, I guess, and, you know, study at this level? Why do you think he... he encouraged you to do that?
Very nice question. I asked him this. And that's back, I think, in 2008. When I graduated, I went to many ulama and asked them. So he told me, look, the dominance of knowledge is with the West. And you and me cannot change it right now. The only way we could make a difference is that joining that band and then finding a middle way. So he said you should have a Western degree. You would have a global presence and a global acceptability, and then you could make your voice heard. What do you think? You know, even if it's classical Islamic knowledge or pure traditional.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting because I was encouraged to do this class by my dad, by my father, Mufti Barakatullah.
Yeah.
And when I was trying to decide whether I should do Islamic studies or Islamic law, one of the things that you've got to realize, brothers and sisters, is that they're completely different, right? Because Islamic law is basically from the law department, okay, at SOAS. And Islamic studies is more the, I think it's called the Near and Middle East department, right? And I would say it's more of a, it's not a law subject, right? It's more like Orientalism would have been back in the day. That's one thing. My dad, the reason why my dad encouraged me to do Islamic law as opposed to Islamic studies, he said to me, look, Fatima, for the last years, what you've been studying in terms of Islam and, you know, fiqh and hadith and all of the subjects that you study in Alamia, in a way, they are a historical look at Islamic law, you know? In many ways, they're a historical look at Islamic law. You're basically looking into the past, right? To see what the great ulama said, what they laid down in the madhahib, for example, etc., etc. But now, when it comes to how Islamic law is being applied in the real world today, right? He said that this will give you a really good insight into, like, I guess, how Islamic or Muslim majority countries function, how Islamic law is actually interacting in real life in those Muslim countries and internationally, right? And I don't think I really appreciated that when I started, because when I started, I kept treating Islamic law as if I'm studying, you know, fiqh, right?
Yeah.
Right? And I think that's why I would sometimes have arguments with the teachers, you know, because some of the statements they would make, I found them like a bit surprising or shocking or even annoying, you know. But then I realized that, no, when they're talking about Islamic law, and this entire course is really looking at it in a very legalistic way, you know, not in a spiritual way at all, not in, yani, in the way that we consider Sharia, right? Like, when we think of Sharia, we think of a much more holistic thing, don't we? In fact, we think of Islam as a whole when we think of Sharia.
Yeah.
But here, we're looking at how the Sharia is interacting with real legal systems and what role it has to play in real legal systems in the world today. So that's basically how I, you know, entered into this class. I wanted to ask you, Mufti Afnan, like, where's my questions for you? Which modules did you take? And can you give us like a little, I guess, snapshot of what you, how you felt about those modules? Oh, actually, before you do that, Mufti, I think I should make clear to everybody. So I'm going to add something to the screen, just so that people can see clearly and easily what we're talking about here. Okay, can everybody see that? I hope everyone can see that. So this is basically the SOAS MA in Islamic Law page on the SOAS website. And I want to make clear to everybody that we're not officially from SOAS. You know, we're not here in an official capacity, like advertising SOAS or even speaking for the university at all. You know, this is literally us just talking about this course from our perspective, our experience, so that brothers and sisters who are considering it, especially practicing brothers and sisters, I think, you know, who might have lots of questions, like, or brothers and sisters from Alamiya backgrounds, they can get an insight into how we experienced it, right? So as you can see, this is the page. And here, so MA in Islamic Law, there's an overview here, okay? The entry requirements, you can see. And it's quite straightforward, right? And this is the main convener, Professor Masood Badrin, and hopefully Professor Masood Badrin is going to join us tonight for a little while. If you look here at the structure, so I think the thing to point out here is that there are 60 credits for the dissertation, right? So the dissertation that you do in Islamic law, it takes 60 credits. And then you can actually be quite flexible in that you choose, I believe, 60 credits from this list, okay, here, of modules. So they're like your core. And then you can choose, I believe, 60 or even just 30 from here. And then there are some open options here. You can see postgraduate open options. And so every year there's a list of open options, sometimes from other departments, that you can actually take. So, for example, if you did want to take some elements of the Near and Middle East classes. So that's from Islamic studies, for example. You can see this huge list, you know. You could take Arabic, for example. You could take, I don't know, Persian, if you're interested, or Islamic. I did Islamic legal texts in Arabic, for example. So in that sense, it's quite flexible, right? Just wanted to point that out. And so if you do it over 1 year, you would be doing all of that. You'd be doing all of those modules, as well as your dissertation, in 1 year. If you do it over 2 years, you can be quite flexible. You could maybe leave your dissertation till the second year and do some modules in the first year, some in the second. If you did it over 3 years, as I did, you could do all of your modules over the 2 years and then just leave the dissertation for the final year, you know? So in that sense, you can make it quite flexible, and you can choose modules that appeal to you, not necessarily only to do with Islamic law. They can be to do with law in general, different aspects, or they can be from another department, depending on which ones are available. So I just wanted to make that clear for everyone. So Mufti Afnan, which modules did you take, and what were your thoughts on those modules?
Yeah, first of all, there are two channels. You took the Masters in Islamic Law, and I took it from LLM.
Right, yes.
Yeah, because I had a law degree. So that was from a lawyer's perspective, but many modules are... So
what's the difference? What's the difference? Because a lot of brothers and sisters, they ask me, like, what's the difference between LLM and MA? I believe content-wise, it's the same, right?
Yeah, there are different optional modules. The difference is that you can take different legal courses. Secondly, it adds to your legal degrees. And thirdly, LLM from UK or from any international university is equivalent to MPhil, Masters in Philosophy. You could go for a PhD right after that.
Yeah.
My courses were Islamic law, number one. That's mandatory. A second, human rights and Islamic law. And third, Islamic law and global financial markets. So the first two courses, Islamic law and human rights, were from Professor Masoud Bedrin. And the third one was from Professor Jonathan Ehrenbrack. And Professor Lynn Wilchman also joined in to teach two or three modules of family law, I guess. What I had assumed was not what I got. I mean, I was, it was a very insightful surprise to me what I learned, and a very good experience, really. I mean, I consulted many strong academics. They said, hey, well, you are an alim, you're a mufti, you're practicing fatwa for the last 14 years. What have you got to know about this, this and that, and you're a lawyer? But, you know, this course opened new realms for me. For example, many things you mentioned, the pragmatic approach, law in practice, law in action, how is it? And secondly, we all of us who have, from the Alamiya background, we are sitting apart from the state law and giving fatwas in Adal Rifta, we have a very idealistic approach of doing Sharia, that this is ideal, and this, there should be an Amirul Mu'mineen, and there should be a Khalifa, and there should be Islamic code, and this and that. But that doesn't happen in the world. It's the law, and it's the merger of Western law, the secular codified law with Islamic law. And another good thing was we studied the history, the fall of the classical Islamic law mode, and the rise of codification, and then there was a rigorous opposition from the traditional ulama in the Ottoman time. But then they had to, because the wheel goes on and you cannot stop. And then there was the adaptability and flexibility of Islamic law towards changing times, which I quite appreciated. I mean, although me and you, I think we were the most critical of these many of the contents, of course, but at the end of the day, this was a great experience. This was the good things about that. Secondly, I think you were asking, should we recommend this course to Alamia graduates or not? I would say I would only recommend this to Alamia graduate, not anyone else. Because if you don't have a good background in classical and traditional fiqh with the ulum al-Quran and ulum al-Sunnah and usul al-fiqh, you get into, misguided, really. Because there was things, there were many things which I think, I consider it could have been better. For example, we studied a criticism on usul al-fiqh, okay? The modernist approach that there need to be a new usul al-fiqh, and we studied those scholars. But we didn't study the real usul al-fiqh, whom we are criticizing. So how can you criticize a science that has been built for 1200 years without studying this? And that was main thing, because fiqh is built on usul al-fiqh. Secondly, we studied the modernist views in many, especially in family law. Some of those scholars have no credibility in the mainstream Islamic scholarships. So I think there was a slight misbalance in some of those courses somewhere. I mean, we can agree to disagree. Thirdly, the aspect of human rights were very interesting. I would suggest all ulama studying fiqh, especially specializing in fiqh anywhere in the world, doing takhasus, should mandatory add human rights law. So I was saying that I would recommend only to those Muslims, especially those who have already studied fiqh with classical fiqh, with traditional ulama. Whether they have done a full Alamia degree or they have taken a 1 year, 2 year short course on that, for reasons. Because we are studying here in Islamic law, human rights, different approaches towards Islam. There are the ultra-conservative approaches, the middle roaders, and the modernist approach. Well, sometime I felt like the modernist scholars I have been given a special privilege.
Yeah, so it's because the Islamic law is from the fiqh perspective, this is an advanced subject, okay? You should first know the basics of fiqh, usul al-fiqh, and then how it's being applied in the world now. And because, you know, ideally, none of the countries is following any madhab strictly. They're all picking and choosing from different madhab. And also, there's a push from the international human rights law, because all of the Islamic countries have signed most of the Islamic human rights treaties. Okay? So they're obliged to follow the Islamic law, but many Islamic countries have already signed with reservations that we won't accept these or those articles, or which are not in consonance with the Islamic law. So now it gets quite complex, because there are scholars who are very orthodox. There are scholars who are middle roaders who want to merge, have a pragmatic approach to walk with the world and hold on with Sharia at the same time. And then there are modernist scholars who want Sharia to adapt to everything what the Western world or Western law is saying. And that's not so clear. There are quite gray areas.
I would say even beyond them, there are secularists and, you know, liberal, very liberal scholars. Or, you know, when we say scholars, we mean like academics as well, right? Academics who... And I agree with you. Actually, what I would say is, if you think this class is going to bring you spirituality, then it's not. You know, it's not there to make you spiritually aware of Islam and that kind of thing. You know, but if you think so, even if you haven't studied Islam like traditionally with scholars, okay, I would say you could do it, as long as you do, alongside it, study Sharia with scholars. I feel like, you know, because there might be some students, some brothers and sisters who they're at that stage of life where they want to pursue a master's and they want to do this. So I would say, as long as you're not thinking of this as your source of Islamic knowledge that you're going to practice, you know, and instead of that, look at it more as a study, you know, a study of the reality, the real kind of landscape of Islamic law in the world, I think you could be fine. Because I think you're right, like some people in our class, I felt like some of them had not had any Islamic background, yeah. You know, and I was a bit worried about them because I think, you know, it doesn't really allow you to understand the Islamic worldview, right? Like as a holistic worldview. It's very technical in that sense, right? It's very technical. It's very, so if you don't have a background in it, you're not really going to understand the spirituality behind any Islamic law, right? So, yeah, I would agree with that. So I would say if people are going to take it, you should definitely either have studied traditionally with scholars, with ulama, or you should be doing it alongside, you know, because there are certain things in the class that you might hear that could confuse you, you know, if you don't have a good Islamic grounding in your fundamentals. It could be confusing. It could be, you could get a misunderstanding from it as well, I think.
Yeah. I think, Fatima, we're on the same page. Either you should have a prior study of Islamic classical Sharia, or you're studying along with, you know, academically talking, professionally, this is also not correct. Because master's is advanced studies. I mean, if you're doing master's in a field, you should have a prior bachelor's grade knowledge of that field, you know? So there are many students who were doing a master's in Islamic law, and they didn't have any prior knowledge of Islam and Islamic law, specifically of fiqh.
Yeah. One thing I just want to point out before we allow Professor Masood on, I can see that he's here. I just want to point out to people that if you don't have a background in law, okay, the good thing about the classes, I hope you can see the screen, that there's actually a course that you do before. So for example, myself, I'm doing the MA, which means that I don't have a previous law degree, or I'm not a qualified lawyer, whereas Mufti Afnan, for example, is. So he did the LLM. For me, doing the MA, we did like this two-week course, which is called Preliminary Law, Legal Reasoning and Legal Methods, which was really good. I must say it was a very good introduction to the legal system, international law, and all of the kind of basic things that you need to kind of get before you start any kind of course on law. So I actually really appreciated that preliminary course. I'm going to let Professor in, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum, Professor Masood.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. It's nice to see you, Professor.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Same here.
Professor, we made it clear to everybody who's on this live stream and like people who might watch it later that when we, like myself and Mufti Afnan, we're not officially from SOAS or anything like that. You know, we're just discussing this course because a lot of brothers and sisters, they contacted us and, you know, sometimes they ask us like, should I take Islamic law? Should I take Islamic studies? You know, which is the better option for me? They ask questions like, is studying Islamic law at SOAS going to confuse me, right? Is it going to be very orientalist in its approach? For example, you know, I'm just sharing with you the types of questions that we get.
Yeah.
So we thought, you know, let's in a really balanced and fair way, just give people our experience and our take. So, Professor, we're really pleased that you're here with us, and we'd love for you to introduce yourself first of all, and just like give everybody a bit of a idea of your own background, because I believe that apart from being a very accomplished academic and, you know, having so many, mashallah, books that you've authored, etc., I think even before that, you you did have a classical Islamic studies background, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, thank you very much. I mean, I do explain to students, because it's usually very good for students to appreciate the background of their lecturers or professors. Mm-hmm. So normally I do, I mean, tell students this in the first class. I mean, I'm a Muslim myself. And as all Muslims, my Islamic education started with, you know, learning the Quran and other Islamic sciences traditionally from the mosque and from the traditional schools. Then, I mean, I was doing my Western education along that. But after that, I did also, I mean, after my secondary school, I did also enter what is normally called the Nizamiya, that is, I mean, the Islamic schools. The formal Islamic school that I attended in Nigeria is called Daru Dawat al-Islamiyya wal Irshad. I mean, it's purely, I mean, a Nizamiya school where, I mean, you learn about Islam, you learn about all the sciences, fiqh, I mean, seerah, I mean, all those sciences. And it's I mean, being in Nigeria, it's classically, we concentrated on the Maliki school. And I mean, we did learn other aspects as well. Then when I finished from my Nizamiya, I then went to do Arabic and Islamic studies in the university, one of the universities in the north, in Nigeria, purely Islamic studies. And then after that, I then also went to another university in northern Nigeria to do a double major in common law, because Nigeria is a pluralist legal system, in common law and Sharia, which is, I mean, and after that, I qualified as a lawyer. I went to the law school, qualified as a lawyer in Nigeria. And then I came to the UK in the 1990s to do a master's in public international law at the University of Nottingham. And I then went on to do my PhD in comparative law, that's Islamic law and international human rights law at Nottingham. And I mean, since then, I have been teaching. I taught in Nottingham, I taught in University of the West of England, Southampton University, Brunel, before I came to SOAS in 2007. So I've been teaching Islamic SOAS for about 14 years now.
MashaAllah. Yes. So Professor Badrin is the convener of the Islamic Law MA and LLM. And I believe you teach the Islamic Law class and the Human Rights and Islamic Law class, right?
That's correct. Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. And so Professor, like for people from a law background, what would you say you hope they will get from this class? And what would you say people from a non-law background would get from this class?
Well, I mean, Islamic, it depends on what one wants to do. Islamic law is very relevant, I mean, these days, both domestically and internationally. If a person has a law background, I mean, the way we teach Islamic law in the law school, also perhaps, I mean, because law is law, and Islamic law is applied. We have civil law, we have Islamic law. I mean, we have common law. A lot of the time, you find, you remember in the class, I do try as much as possible to sort of do comparatives with the common law system on many issues. So if a person has a law background, perhaps, I mean, that would be easier for them to, I mean, relate to when we give examples. Because there are, so, you see, my perspective, I used to say in class, there are so many similarities. You know, a lot of the time we tend to see that, well, Islamic law is very different from common law, and from, there are many similarities, as I do say. And many of the principles we talk about, for example, and many of the principles we cover in class, you'll be able to see principle of necessity, for example, darura, you know, I mean, equity, for example, and so on and so forth. So you'll be able to, now as somebody who does not have a law background, we do have a processional for those who do not have a law background who want to do this course. I mean, because we teach it as law. Yeah. It's not the Islamic law course at SOAS. It's not a doctrinal course. Mm-hmm. It is not to teach you about religion. It's not to teach you about religion. Although yes. Islamic law is based on religious norms, but you want to look at it from a jurisprudential point of view. So we critique it. I mean, we look and engage with it. I mean, we try as much as possible. I mean, to see the differences when the jurists differed on a particular view. What were they thinking? I mean, what was in there? We try to poke into that to see what they were thinking. Why did they read this view? And things like that. I mean, so I think if a person wants to practice, for example, if they want to, because even in the UK today, many of the law firms in the city, they want people who are qualified, who understand Islamic law, to be part of their team. You know?
Really?
So, yes, many of them write us a lot of the time asking if students will be interested. Now, for example, Islamic law finance, for example, is very popular now. Family law, there are so many, elements of family law. People contact law firms and they want people who are experienced in Islamic law. I mean, sometimes we have people who only come to do Islamic law as associate students. They just take only Islamic law course. We have lawyers in town who come to do that. Now, for a person who is not a lawyer, who just wants, to learn doctrine, they might feel a little bit challenged. They might feel shocked, actually, in the class. Because, yeah. I do say, if you remember vividly, that, the jurist and everyone who tends to, the presumption is that the jurist must do their jurisprudence underlined by taqwa, by God consciousness, But the truth is, the jurists, are human as well. in relation to, and only God can judge a person's taqwa. So it's not a doctrinal class whereby we say, well, God has spoken. You cannot interrogate this. No. We just want to see if law affects our lives. That's just the truth. It restricts us from doing certain things. And if law restricts us from doing certain things, we want to know why. Why does it restrict us from doing those things? So that's the nature. I am able to say this because I did Islamic studies before I came to do Islamic law. So I know the difference between the two. Now, in Islamic studies, in Islamic studies class, don't want to ask too many questions. You don't want to, Samina wa Atana, where God has spoken.
You mean classical Islamic studies, not Islamic studies that SOAS, right? You mean?
Depends on, who is teaching it. SOAS, as you see, as you rightly said, we look at everything from a critical point of view. And academics do that anyway.
Because it's an academy at the end of the day, right?
Yes, it's an academic institution. I do tell my, even PhD students, I do tell my students, because a lot of the time when you see, it's not about challenging anybody's faith. But at the end of the day, by doing that, actually can strengthen your faith. This is my own view.
Yes.
Because, by my own training, I think it made me a lot more conscious, in relation to, actually, this rule, can be also rationalized. And it strengthens I have had PhD students, and I have students who have come, the students on the law course, who have come to really, when we are talking about each year, for example, and we blow it up and things like that. One lady came to tell me that, her mother is really warning her at home because she's beginning to argue with the mother now. Many times she's being warned that she should be aware of her faith. Now, I used to tell students that, look, interrogating these things, except your faith is weak, it cannot affect your faith. That's just the truth. That's my own perception. It cannot, I don't think it can affect your faith. It just raises questions about certain things, and then you try to look into them, and there are some that can be justified rationally. There are some that may not. And then you just, every religion has its dogma. Even Western law has certain dogmas, certain rules, which sometimes may not make sense. This is just the rule. You follow it. For example, in land law, we're talking about it the other day, in Western land law, there are certain rules that I mean, people are arguing that should be removed because they don't make sense any longer. Because I mean, that's law in the way it operates.
Yeah, thank you. Jazakallah khair. Thank you, Professor, for that.
Fatima, I think, if you would allow me, although you're the host, can I ask a question, Professor?
Of course.
Yes, Afnan, please.
Yeah. Professor, that's also a practical question. I mean, you talked about people who have a law background. Not. What about people who are alim and who are muftis? I mean, they're practicing fatwa in an institution. And we know the difference between fatwa is not non-binding, a personal opinion, and a legal opinion is mulzam, it's binding. So what benefit can a mufti, practicing mufti, have from studying Islamic law, and especially Islamic law at SOAS?
Yes, I mean, especially, I mean, you are in a better position to be able to answer that, I mean, from Elena's point of view, from this perspective. A mufti can really benefit, because you see, iftar itself, one important aspect of it is, I mean, one has to take into consideration the circumstances, you know, in relation to giving the fatwa. And sometimes it's very, very good to really rub minds. Whereby, I mean, this year we had people joining us from different parts of the world. You know, for example, on issues which a person might be thinking of, maybe one is confronted with a question. In Pakistan, we are confronted with a question which you need to give fatwa on. Now, joining the class here in London, I mean, you could see some perspectives that might be completely different from Pakistan, which you might then consider, and you could use actually that to buttress your fatwa, that, for example, if it were to be in London, based on these circumstances, my fatwa might have been different.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, it gives room to be able to see the different perspectives by which, I mean, one uses circumstances in order to influence one's fatwa. So muftis can really benefit from. We do, for example, you know, in the first term, we cover the application of Islamic law, like Islamic law in practice. And we do cover, I mean, Al-Qadha, Wal-Ifta, and all those in relation to. Yeah. So you are in the best position to be able to, because I know you are a mufti, and I mean, perhaps, I mean, and that will help us as well to know, I mean, that type of benefit. If you could say a few things about, I mean, perhaps maybe what benefit did you see, or perhaps maybe it didn't really help in relation to your responsibilities as a mufti.
Yeah, Professor, I told many things in the beginning before where you came. The specific thing, I would just agree 100% with you that, you know, the fatwa is adaptable to urf and darura and changing times. So how would you know the changing times and different perspectives? For example, there are many things we think that these are qat'iyat, al-thawabit.
Yes.
I mean, the 100% but actually there's not an agreement on that. Many parts of Islamic world, like in Nigeria, in Morocco, in Malaysia, the practice is different. So you know that this mas'ala is not qat'i, this is mukhtarafi, this is mujtahad fi, and there's majal for a different opinion. I mean, really, the approach with this course was, it made me quite flexible and adaptable and a new global perspective, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think for me, it stopped me from being naive, I think, because as I was mentioning to Mufti Afnan that, you know, when you study in a confessional institution and you study Islam classically, in a way, you're studying Islamic law's history, right? You know, you're not really aware of how it's playing out in the world today, right? Exactly. And so I think it really gave us a crash course, I think, in the way law works and Islamic law in particular in the world. And I think especially with human rights and Islamic law, that was very eye-opening because, as we mentioned earlier, so many Muslim countries have signed up to human rights treaties, and in many ways Muslims benefit from those treaties, right? So I think, and for me, I think the legal theory aspect was very eye-opening as well.
Okay.
Just being able to study and see what the different approaches are that scholars are grappling with, you know, because at the end of the day, these are real problems that they're having to grapple with and find solutions for, you know, in our times. And I think if you don't, if you're not aware of the various issues and the way the system works, I think you can have a very black and white kind of approach, right?
Right. Yeah. That's right. I mean, I think that's a very important race. It's really very important. And I think, I mean, Islamic legal theory aspect of it is usually very, very interesting. Sometimes people who do not have the background at all, from the beginning, they find it challenging. It's very abstract. But then gradually, they build on into it. And I'm happy for you saying this. I mean, and it reflected actually. I mean, if you remember vividly, I mean, you wrote a very, excellent essay in that, perspective, which I believe, really challenged you to really think. And then, it didn't move you from your understanding of the classical perspective, but it pushed you to really,
consider,
which was really very, very good, you know. And it's in the world, the reality of the world in which we live in. And Mufti Afnan also did mention that, you know, and that's the world in which we live in relation to the fact that the way law works, you know, we just have to reflect. And because if Islamic law particularly must be the law that applies for all times, then we have to be able to think about it in a way that resolves the contemporary challenges that faces us. That's what we try to do. Sometimes we don't get it fully right, but sometimes, we do try.
I want to show brothers and sisters. This is Professor Masood's book.
Oh,
I've got a copy of it. So this is one of his books. If you get a copy of this book from Amazon, Islamic Law, a very short introduction, it's like Oxford University Press. This kind of gives you a really good overview of what we're going to cover in the Islamic law class, right? Like, including the human rights class and finance as well. So, I think if you really want like a good overview, if you get a copy of this book, you'll basically understand the content of the. But Professor, is there anything that you want students to know, like for the year coming? Like, have there been any changes? I noticed that. Islamic law in global financial markets wasn't mentioned on the website. Is it not?
Yeah, we are not very sure whether it's going to run yet. Sometimes, lecturers sometimes are on sabbatical, and sometimes by the end of the third term, it will become very clear which modules are. But as you rightly mentioned, the LLM, both the LLM and MA, requires students to do a total of 180 credits.
Yes.
180 credits, that means 120 credits of taught modules, and then 60 credits for the dissertation. Mm-hmm. Now, we have, about five main Islamic law modules when they are running. That is the main Islamic law. Then we have human rights and Islamic law. Then we have Islamic law and global financial markets, as you mentioned. We have what we call GLASMINA, gender, law, and society in the Middle East and North Africa. So all this relates to different elements of Islamic law. Now, these are all these are in the A list. A student who wants to do either MA or LLM in Islamic law must do at least two of those. That is, 60 credits. You know, you have to come in two from those. And then the remaining 60 credits, you could take them from, we have open modules. You could actually even take courses from the Islamic Studies Department, like Quran, like Hadith. To meet them up. And then you write a dissertation. So you have to do four full modules, four full taught modules. That is 30, each module, full modules are 30 credits. Or you could do, if you take 15 credit modules, then you are doing more than four. So then after that, you do a dissertation of 60 credits. So it depends on a person's interest. But normally, if you want to do a program, LLM in Islamic law, MA in Islamic law, you have to do the Islamic law module, which we are talking about now. And then you can do other modules to meet up your required credits.
Thank you, Professor. And Professor, is there any advice that you could give to, like, what kind of mindset would you like students to come to this class with, especially if they are from a practicing Muslim background. I'm mentioning this because you might have noticed that even some of us, when we initially in the class, you know, some of the ideas, some of the kind of, you know, because if you're from a confessional Islamic studies background, you've been to an Islamic institution, then you're not really encouraged to question much, you know, like in a way you're absorbing, right? You're absorbing, you're taking in, and you're, you might be aware of some differences of opinion, but obviously you're not interrogating, like, you know, aspects of Islamic law in the same kind of way. So sometimes it can be a little bit of a surprise, I would say, to students, right? Like if they're not used to that. So do you have any, because you told us that you yourself, you know, initially it was kind of, maybe it might have been a bit challenging even for you, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I agree totally. I mean, even myself, when I went into the university, I mean, it was really challenging because you feel, you find yourself, if you're not very careful, being very defensive.
Yes.
Listen to many of the issues that have been. And so what I will add, what I normally address police, I mean, there's no harm in feeling that way. But gradually, I mean, one should have an open mind. It's not about challenging one's faith. One should have an open mind. And I mean, as time goes on, one will be able to, one thing that it teaches is, you know, it sort of teaches you to really create a balance in relation to perhaps, because many of the materials that we read, you know, I mean, Mufti Afnan raised one of those points in relation to the fact that perhaps maybe we use too many Orientalist materials. And I feel that I don't see much harm in it, in the sense that, you know, many of the questions that they raise, I feel like they are valid questions.
Yeah.
Which perhaps, I mean, we need to respond to, which Muslims need to. Right. There are questions that, I mean, normally a Muslim may not raise. A Muslim, I mean, a person with a classical Islamic law background may not raise that. I mean, they take it for granted that, look, Allah has spoken. He has spoken. I mean, Samina Wapan, you can't question this. And, you know, but then when those questions are raised by Orientalists in their writings, it gives us opportunity to reflect over them, because these are things that we meet in the real world.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, people will challenge you, will ask you. And if you have not dealt with it, it makes you actually feel at home, and it gives you confidence to be able to then relate to. You are not shocked. So, for example, somebody who has not interacted with such material, if you went to a conference, or maybe you are in a meeting and you are confronted with it, you know, if you are not very careful, you'll be taken off guard. Sometimes you can become very annoyed, feeling that, well, you know, your religion is being challenged and things like that. So I think it's part of the training in the type of world in which we live, especially those of us who live in the West. You know, it's important that, I mean, perhaps one gets used to that. So I will tell students who will be on it, I mean, they might feel challenged, but over time, they will be able to see that, well, it's for the good. And I mean, it teaches you to be able to deal with such questions when you meet them in real life.
Thank you, Professor. I'm just looking at if anyone has any questions. They can just quickly type them in the chat. I've got one question here from one of our viewers. They're asking, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Can you please touch on the areas of work you feel this qualification may lead to? So a person with an MA or LLM in Islamic law, for example, how could that maybe benefit them in lines of work, I guess?
Now, for example, if you are a lawyer and you have an LLM in Islamic law, it opens, I mean, it's an additional, it's a double whammy for you. I mean, for example, in the UK, I mentioned in class, these days, because I've stopped really doing them, in the sense that, I mean, it comes nearly all the time. And particularly in the UK and in the West generally, you find out that in the UK, for example, a lot of the time cases come to court whereby it's elements of Islamic law, and there's need for expert opinion. I showed you some example of those. I mean, when we're doing the course, all the time, you find people, I mean, saying that Muslims who are from Somalia, I mean, people who have, I mean, issues of marriage, issues of divorce. So they want, and it's good money, you know, and such, if you are a lawyer, you can be able to, if you have studied Islamic law, it's part of it. Now, people, there are many Muslims in the UK, for example. I mean, in my own community, I help in that regard because I'm the resident, I'm also the resident Islamic, I mean, consultant at the Muslim Association of Nigeria Mosque at the Old Kent Road. Now, many, you find many Muslims, I mean, even though they've lived in the West, you find at the, towards the end of their life, they know they live in the UK, but they raise questions about their estate, their wills. They want their wills to be done in a way that satisfies Islamic law, and also that satisfies, you know, the UK law.
Yeah,
UK and there are ways to do it, whereby, you know, so if you are knowledgeable within Islamic law and you are a lawyer, I mean, it helps you for you to be able to help in doing that. You write the will in a way that conforms with both, and it will be applicable, I mean, in the UK. Now, for Islamic studies, now, I mean, it depends. For Islamic studies, people could teach. Now, for example, if you do an MA in Islamic law and you are not a lawyer, I mean, it increases your knowledge. People could teach. You could also do expert views in relation to the fact that you are qualified. I mean, you've done Islamic law. And perhaps, I mean, if one wants to actually also qualify as a lawyer after taking it, in order for it to be applied as law, particularly in the UK, I mean, very soon, the next 2 years or so, an LLB degree will no longer be required for you to be a lawyer. You know, they are trying to remove that off. I mean, you just take the bar exams or these or solicitors exams. As long as you pass them, you become a solicitor. You know, and Islamic law can also be very, very useful in that regard. So there are various means by which one could use it. Teaching, one. Then, I mean, practicing law, two. Then three. You know, many. You know, I have had some spell with the United Nations. Many international organizations want people who have expertise in Islamic law. As I said, Islamic law has become really very relevant, not only domestically, but internationally. I mean, unfortunately, you find out that, I mean, many of the bad things that are happening in the world, wars, humanitarian issues that need to be resolved, you find many of them in Muslim-majority countries. And the UN, the international system, have been able to see that, where they need people who are actually qualified in order to use an insider's perspective in order to resolve those issues. So Islamic law comes to, so Islamic law becomes really very handy. So if you want to, I mean, it's a very good area within the international organizations system. International finance, for example, I mean, Islamic finance, for example, is really very hot now everywhere. So there are a variety of areas by which both MA or LLM, one hopes to be able to utilize the knowledge.
And I guess also people could go even higher into doing a PhD and then professorial lecturing, etc. Right?
Yes.
There's one more question, Professor. Is there an option to study Islamic law at undergraduate level at SOAS? Somebody's asking.
Yes. Now, for example, many universities are doing it now, but I mean, traditionally, SOAS used to be the only university that taught Islamic law in the UK, you know, in the 1940s, because, I mean, it's the only, now up to today, it is the only university within the University of London system. It's the only college within the University of London system that teaches it. So people do come. So we do it at undergraduate and postgraduate level. So people, it's a very popular optional undergraduate course at SOAS. People from SOAS, people from other University of London colleges. I mean, so it's available also for undergraduates.
And do they have to be part of the degree, a degree, or can people come in and just do a module?
Yes, they can.
They can
do a module. We call them SEC students. We call them associate students. If you look on the SOAS website, there's, I mean, possible, not only for Islamic law, any of the modules that we teach at SOAS, if you just want to do that single module, they charge you for just that single module, and you get a certificate for it after. You get a certificate.
Thank you. Professor, I just want to thank you. Thank you, Jazakallah Khair, for coming and joining us. There was one more question I had in my head that was quite important that people had been asking me. Is it going to be on site this year, or do you have any idea if it's going to be online or on site?
Well, at least we know that for the first term we'll still be online.
So international students who can't travel, for example, they could still enroll, right?
That's right.
Yeah, they could take it online.
So. Definitely, they could. Yeah, mm-hmm. And I mean, with the experience that we've had, actually, and the discussion is ongoing. And if you look at all our lecture rooms now, a lot of resources are being put in. By the time even when COVID lockdown disappears, we'll be doing what is called blended teaching, whereby, I mean, we'll be teaching in class, and people who are international are not able to come to London will also be joining us. I mean, through online.
Oh, that would be excellent. That sounds very good. Yeah. Thank you, Professor. We're going to continue with our program.
Thank you so much, Estella. I mean, Fatima, thank you very much for really giving me this opportunity to part of this.
Can I just say to you, Professor, that I actually have learned so much from you and from your writing. I think apart from law and apart from Islamic law, I think I learned to write a lot better, you know, through this course, and to be able to, as a Muslim, I think, and as an academic, articulate myself in an effective way, in a more effective way, because I read a lot of your stuff, and that did really help me. So I just want to thank you.
Thank you so much for your compliments. I'm really thrilled about that. Fatima, let me seek something from you. I mean, since you've read a short introduction on Islamic law, introduction on Islamic law, if you could go on Amazon to leave a review on it.
I have already.
Have you? Oh, sorry about that. Yes. I didn't know.
I think I was one of the first people to buy it. I actually bought three copies. Okay. And I sent one to Mufti Afnan as a gift and somebody else. Alhamdulillah.
I mean, it has really been very, very, very popular. It has, I mean, gone into more than two reprints already. You know,
really?
They've sold very, very fast. And actually, if you look on Amazon now, they've cut the price down completely, because, I mean, it's really selling like hot. When I had to interrogate them, when the price went down, I thought, I mean, is it not selling? They said, no. They said, I mean, actually, it is selling really, really fast. This is why they could bring the price down in order for, you know.
Okay, cool.
So it's really...
Because so many copies
are
selling.
Thank you so much.
Mm. That's good. Alhamdulillah, that's good. I think because it's written in such a balanced way, I feel. And it's amazing, actually, how you managed to fit everything in to such a small...
That was what they requested, and it really took time. I mean, but alhamdulillah, that at the end of the day, we're able to do it. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Professor. Assalamu alaikum. Hopefully, I'll see you next year.
Inshallah.
Assalamu alaikum. Okay, so that was Professor Masood Badrin. As you can tell, he's a really nice guy, mashallah. He's a very nice professor. He comes from an Islamic studies background, as we said, himself in Nigeria. He also worked for the UN. So he's he's an expert really in human rights and Islamic law. And this was his book that we mentioned, okay? Islamic Law, A Very Short Introduction. So if you want to know the contents of this class, that's pretty much the best way to know the contents. If you get his book, it's literally each of the chapters is everything that we study during the Islamic Law MA class. So I'm just going to go back to my questions that people have sent me and continue answering them. I think Mufti Afnan is gone now. If he wants to come back, he can. Yeah, but I know that in Pakistan it's very, very late at the moment. So thank you to him. Jazakallah khair and Mufti Afnan for participating. Yeah, so we said it's not a doctrinal class. It's not a class where you're going to learn about Islam as a spiritual subject, as a religion. You're going to learn about all the various aspects of Islamic law and how they interact in the real world, how Muslim countries, for example, are applying them. If you do, for example, Islamic law in global financial markets, which is basically Islamic finance, about Islamic finance, it will really give you an introduction to how the Islamic legal system was disrupted, so after the Khilafah and, you know, what happened in the Ottoman Empire, how the Islamic legal system kind of fell apart, basically, and slowly but surely. But then also how countries are now reintroducing Islamic law. That's been a very eye-opening aspect, I think, of this course, you know, how Muslim countries are reintroducing Islamic law. And especially when it comes to finance, because that's a very, that's probably one of the areas in which Islamic law is seeing a huge amount of interest and growth, right? Human rights and Islamic law, that's a very interesting subject because you get to see all of the treaties that Muslim countries themselves have created. So, you know, the OIC. If you're interested, for example, in Palestinian rights, I think that would be really interesting for you, you know, to study human rights and Islamic law and to see how, which countries have signed up to which treaties and, you know, what the implications of that is, right? Because sometimes I think it's not very clear to us how the UN works, how human rights treaties and regimes work, right? If you study it, you become much more aware and you also get an appreciation for how what Islam says about freedom of speech, for example. It's not as black and white as sometimes it's presented to us, you know? And I think that's one of the things I gained from this class, that a lot of the subjects that, you know, sometimes you see Islamophobic people or media attacking Muslims for, sometimes we as Muslims are not defending it in the right way because we ourselves are not very clued up about what Islamic law actually says about those issues, right? So, like, for example, when it comes to freedom of speech, I've seen so many debates that brothers have done online that really, I would say, miss the mark because it's obvious that they themselves don't really know what has been said and what has been discussed by classical scholars as well as academics, Muslim academics, on that subject, right? So, and also, again, women's rights. One of the things I noticed is that when it comes to women's rights, unfortunately, in Western academia, it's completely saturated with feminist voices, right? Now, that can be quite upsetting for a Muslim, right? When you enter that and you hear the types of things that are said, right? So, for example, in one of the classes, one of the professors said, you know, according to this academic, you know, Muslim scholars throughout history or the early Muslim scholars saw women as a sexual object, right? That's really upsetting to hear because it's not true, okay? It's not true. Now, we can either get upset about stuff like that or we can understand that actually certain academics have written about these things. They've engaged with it. And unfortunately, they end up being the voices for that subject and that topic. If we, for example, as Muslims were to enter that field and contribute to that field, if we were to engage and to learn to write excellently and, you know, engage academically and get things published, we could add nuance to that, right? We could add a counter view. And I don't feel that's really being done, you know, in our times. So, other questions. Should I do Islamic studies or Islamic law? I think we've kind of answered that. If you want, you know, Islamic studies, if you look at all the modules on the website, you'll see slightly different modules, more kind of engaged with textual study, I would say, like Quran, Hadith, and stuff like that. Islamic law is from the law department, which means that it's very much about law, how it works in the world today. And there is a historical element. So we do study, you know, elements of Usul al-Fiqh and the historical Islamic law, right, and its formation and all of that. But the bulk of the class is about Islamic law today and how it's interacting in different or working in different Muslim polities, right, around the world. But also you can, as I said, it's quite flexible. So you could potentially take, say, one module from the Near and Middle East department, you know. There's also the, so you could take Hadith or Quran or, you know, one of those types of subjects if you wanted, along with Islamic law. As long as you fulfill the core requirements, you know, there is some flexibility. And also you can sit in on some, on like one module, I think, every year. That you don't take as an exam. You're not taking it officially, but you're just able to go to the lectures and benefit from that class. So, for example, I did, I've forgotten what it's called now. I think it's called Islamic Law in South Asia, Islam in South Asia. So got an introduction to how Islam came to South Asia and, you know, the history behind that. So, but I didn't sit that as an official module for which I did an exam or an essay. I just attended the lectures in order to kind of benefit from that. So it's really up to you. I mean, I found Islamic law to be a more challenging subject than Islamic studies. Islamic studies, for me, it was more like more of the same, in the sense that if you've studied, you know, an Alamia degree, if you've been studying Arabic, you've been studying Quran and Hadith and Islamic texts, there's a lot of translation work, for example, in Islamic studies. There's it in some ways, it's more of the same, you know, whereas Islamic law was think outside the box, get a completely new perspective on how Islamic law is working in the world today. So for me, it was much more. It was more challenging because it's a law subject. You literally have to get to grips with legal language, you know, legal research and stuff like that. So if you're keen on that, then I would encourage you to take Islamic law rather than Islamic studies. other questions? How has it benefited you? Okay, for me personally, as I mentioned to Professor Badrin, I don't think doing a degree is all about the subject that you're studying. It's actually about learning to express yourself and articulate yourself well in writing. I think that's one of the key things that you learn from academia if you do it properly, right? And that's one of the things that I feel that I've really benefited from this class with. So I would say my academic writing has improved probably tenfold, right? Because not just because of, not just because of having to write essays, but also because when I wrote an essay, I would get feedback from from the academics, and I would improve it, right? Plus it's like an amazing opportunity to read. You basically, I think I've read more than I've read for like the last 10 years, right? In the last year and or two, I've read more than I read in the last 10 years. Why? Because you have to read. You have to do a certain number of readings every week. So it's challenging, but you learn to read fast. You can actually feel your brain kind of adjusting and adapting and being able to absorb much more than you would have before. Right. And that comes with practice. Right. Also, there are workshops that you can attend. And that's what I really benefited from. So when I first started the class, I went to workshops, and the workshops would give you insights into, for example, how to write an excellent postgraduate essay, how to write a dissertation, how to get critical in your writing, you know. Develop critical writing skills. There are certain softwares you can get to know about that help you with footnotes and bibliographies and all of that kind of stuff, right? So I think you get out of it as much as you really want. If you're the sort of student who's just going to come to class, attend minimally, and then just go home, you might not get so much out of it, right? But if you're the sort of student who's willing to speak up in class, who's willing to question things, you know, because it's a safe space for you to ask whatever you want, to challenge even the professors, right? And if you're the sort of student who, after you write an essay, you follow it up, you know, consult with your professors and say, can you please tell me where I went wrong, how I could improve this, and really engage and seek to improve your work, you know, you're going to really, really see yourself become a force to be reckoned with in terms of becoming articulate. Also, what else did I want to say? Another aspect is you actually get a real appreciation for, yeah, you get an appreciation for liberal views. You get an appreciation for even quite dodgy views, you know. But as Muslims, I feel like you have to engage with those views, right? If you don't want to, if you don't like that kind of thing, then this class isn't for you, you know. But if you are willing to engage, you are willing to listen to some of the very liberal views that are out there about Islamic law, people who, you know, in the past have tried, sometimes sincerely, right, but maybe taken the wrong approach from our perspective, you know, still there's so much to benefit from that, because you at least get to appreciate what the different views were and why they had those views, right? So you end up having a much kind of, I would say, nuanced and richer understanding of how actually Muslim scholars had to grapple with quite difficult circumstances, you know? Can you imagine, like, after all these countries were divided into nation states, and then, you know, their legal systems were colonized, and English law was sometimes brought in, and then some elements of Islamic law were brought in, French legal codes were brought in, you know? This is the reality of the Muslim world at the moment. And I think this course really was eye-opening in that regard, you know? So it made you realize, oh, so that's how the Saudi legal system is. That's how the Egyptian legal system is. These are the kind of great voices from the past who tried to influence that. And, you know, who are the modern scholars? So, for example, one of my essays this year was about Yusuf Qardawi, right? Yusuf al-Qardawi and his legal theory. And it was really eye-opening. I absolutely loved writing that essay, and I loved researching it as well. And you know, the actually one of the best writers on Yusuf al-Qardawi's Islamic legal theory is an Israeli academic who's actually written an amazing book on Yusuf al-Qardawi. But yeah, so I think those are really all of the questions that people have been asking me. Let me see if there are any other questions. Yeah, the course is available online. Like, if you register and you pay the fees, you can access it online. And, you know, if I can, I will show you what it looks like. Just give me a moment. I'm actually going to give you a sneak peek into what the background is like. So this is like I'm logging in to my area of the SOAS kind of space. Okay, let me just show you. I'm going to share my screen with you, and you shall see. This is Moodle, right? So Moodle is basically like, 1 minute, can you see? So this is basically the space that you have as a student where you can, where all your subjects are. So for me, for example, you can see I've got here, these are the modules that I studied: human rights and Islamic law, international protection of human rights, Islam in South Asia, Islamic law. So if you go to one of them, you can see, for example, you'll have, these are like student discussions that go on. All of your lecture notes, seminar sheets are posted here every single week. Any kind of information that you need, your exams. And then the lectures, because, you know, after COVID, they went online. We've been having lectures like this, basically, which is you come to this page and you click on. So this was week one, for example, the nature of Islamic law. You'd go to this link and then you could attend the class online. The year before that, it was on site. So I got to experience both in that sense. And Professor Badrin just said that you'd probably, the first term is probably only going to be online this year. And then it will probably go back to being on site. So just to show you, this was term one last year, the nature of Islamic law. So these are like the readings, all the stuff you have to read for that class, at least most of it you should try to read. And then topic two was revelation as legislation, law in the Quran. Topic three was the jurists and the law, the early days. So you get like a historic overview as well. And then text and reasoning, classical theories of the law. So you can see you have readings from, you know, Western Islamicists, as well as, you know, and kind of readings about what traditional scholars said. Fatwas and Qanun, post-classical law and legal systems. And now it's bringing it back to the modern days, right? To modern times. Then we had pre-modern developments and early codification. So, you know, how things started to change, how, you know, the Majalla, which is basically I think it was the first codification of Islamic law. Codification means like making Islamic law into black and white law rather than fiqh, right? So making it as a statements of law, which the Ottomans started to do, understanding what effect that had. And then modern legal theories and legislation. Quite interesting. You learn about the modernists and what they tried to do. You learn about liberal approaches to Islamic law and also classical approaches. What I did actually in this section when I studied this was I created my own categorization. And that's another thing you can do, right? As an academic, you don't have to go by the categorizations that previous academics have put, right? So if they've said like traditional scholars and then they have modernists, liberals, blah, blah, blah. I actually created my own typology. So my typology was conservative orthodoxy and pragmatist orthodoxy, and then liberals and then secularists, right? So, you know, if you're a creative person, you can actually bring your own kind of thoughts into it, your own ideas and your own insights. State, Sharia and society, contemporary issues, and then Islamic criminal law and punishments. That's very interesting. Courts and procedure, Islamic family law, the marriage contract, age of marriage, marriage equality, option of puberty, the dawah, right? It's all very interesting, like, things that are quite relevant to our times as well. Incidents of marriage, maintenance. So we also studied some cases, right? Cases that have been brought to different courts, either in Muslim countries or even here in the UK, where people, you know, invoked Islamic law or referred to Islamic law for certain things. So here are some cases regarding polygyny and marriage stipulations, invalid, irregular marriages and their effects, talaq, khula and judicial dissolution, fasakh, child custody and guardianship of children. Yeah, so that's, I've just given you a secret sneak peek. You wouldn't normally get to see this. right? Because it's like my private space in my SOAS Moodle thing, as they call it. Let me see if there are any other questions. How do you feel having studied this course? Where do you feel this can bring benefit? Well, you know, I think we all have our own personal, I guess, goals and aims. For me, I wanted to be able to write academically and to be able to write academic books as well in the future. So, and engage academically. Actually, a few years back, I was invited to a debate or discussion with Amina Wadud, right? Who's like, you know, an academic from America who's written books about, you know, women and the Quran, and from quite a, I would say, feminist and liberal approach. And at that time, I remember really like not really feeling very confident to take part in that discussion. Not because I didn't know what the kind of Islamic answers are to certain questions, but because I wasn't familiar with the academic setting, right? And so I really felt that since Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala keeps getting me invited to, you know, speak to academics, I should enter academia and I should also be able to engage. And, you know, I actually have always wanted to do a PhD and, you know, do further study anyway. So I think for me, it's benefited me in that it's made me a much better writer. It's made me able to engage with all the different issues and arguments, I think, that are there. It's improved my vocabulary, even though I'm a native English speaker, you know, just having to read so much and having to articulate yourself well means you end up learning so much and, you know, learning words that you wouldn't usually use in everyday life. So I think it's helped me to be more articulate and to write better. And I hope that I can get some of my work published in journals and make a contribution to academia, right? So those are some of the ways I think it's benefited me personally so far. Where can we take courses to write master's thesis? So I think somebody's asking, like, how can you get, like, learn how to write a master's thesis, etc. Well, you know, if you sign up to a university like SOAS, you do get access to a lot of extra courses and workshops and things where you could attend and learn some of these things. But at the end of the day, you know, you actually have to do the writing, you have to actually practice, you have to do it. And that's where you really do the learning. But also there are guidebooks you can get that really help you to write master's theses. And I guess throughout the year, because you're writing so much and you're writing essays, so typically, for example, for Islamic law, you write a 4,000 word essay, and then you have the exam. And sometimes the exam can be an essay, depending on, you know, what the setup is. If there's a pandemic going on or whatever, you know, that can change. But when you're writing like 4,000 word essays three or four or five times, you become good at writing, right? Like you have the opportunity to practice and really engage. And as I said, I actually learned a lot from Professor Badrin's own writing, because he is a practicing Muslim. And, you know, even though he has to engage with different areas of Islamic law and quite liberal ideas, actually, I've always found personally him to be quite true to you know, orthodox ideals. Perhaps maybe, you know, more of a pragmatic approach, right, rather than conservative. But, you know, I don't see him as somebody who, for example, you know, believes in secularism, for example, or, you know, as there are other Muslim academics who do. So I actually found reading his work and seeing how he engages with different views, even views that he doesn't necessarily agree with, I found that really useful, because it kind of trains you and makes you able to do the same. And one of the questions I did get was, like, you know, what's the point of studying a degree at a Western university? Like, you know, they're not going to teach you about your deen, right? Well, the point is that you're not here to learn about the deen, right? The point of these types of courses is not to learn your religion in order to practice it. I think the point is to become aware of the different discussions that are taking place in the academic space regarding various aspects of Islamic law, and to be able to engage with them and become conversant with academia, right? And be able to be part of that discussion. I don't think there's anything more amazing than going to a library and digging up books from, you know, scholars of the past, classical and academic scholars, and just dipping into them and realizing that, you know, this is the treasury that is there, you know, the treasure that is there in those libraries waiting for us to kind of read it, absorb it. The effort that was put into those books and writing those books and engaging in those issues, you know, we've got to benefit from that, and we've got to be able to engage with that. So I think, I hope I've kind of given you all a good overview, and I'm going to end the session now if there are no other questions. So Jazakum Allah Khair, and thank you so much for joining me. I really hope that you benefited from hearing from Mufti Afnan and Professor Masood Badrin and myself. I wasn't here to advertise the Islamic law class at SOAS. I was here to give you an insight into it, I guess, if you are considering it, and to tell you that, yeah, you know, there are a lot of things that you can benefit from this class with. And as Professor Badrin highlighted, there are things that sometimes as a Muslim might challenge your thinking that you might not like as well, right? And Mufti Afnan also highlighted that myself and him, you know, we sometimes in class would push back against certain ideas, right, that were being put forward by certain academics. But if you have a strong grounding in your deen, and if you have, if you can study with scholars, you know, with classical scholars alongside your studies or before you come to this class, then inshallah, it should not be something that kind of affects you in a negative way. It should be something that, you know, matures you in a way and allows you to kind of engage, to become conversant with the issues involved, and to become really aware of, you know, what discussions are taking place. So with that, I'm going to leave you and bid you farewell. Jazakum Allah khairan. This video should be available afterwards, inshallah. So if you know anyone who needed to hear this, please do share it with them. And hopefully I'll see you on the Ilmfeed podcast or on my own podcast on Muslim Central at a future date. جزاكم الله خيرا السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته سبحانك اللهم وبحمدك أشهد أن لا إله إلا أنت أستغفرك وأتوب إليك والسلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته